Hello, this is Music Weekly from The Guardian. I'm Alexis Petridis, and in today's podcast, as Angular Records release a compilation of Cold Wave tracks from the early 80s, we speak to label boss Joe Daniel about this forgotten genre. And Lydia the Rose, who appears on the album with her band Nine Circles, tells us how this belated success is most welcome.
I never believed that a thing like that was happening, because I thought our music was nothing for all these years.
Singles Club this week features Erykah Badu, Plan B and Farrah. And finally, Finnish ambient popsters Husky Rescue turn our studio into Lapland as they play a beautiful live track for us and explain why they love the cold and fear the heat.
Kind of find that in the music there is this kind of airiness, and it needs to be this kind of space. How I feel the music, it's some sort of window to that kind of world where we are living.
That's all in Music Weekly. With me, as usual, is Rosie Swash. How you doing, Rosie?
I'm good. I went to see your favourite band last night.
Who's that?
Wild Beasts.
Wow, were they Wild Beasts? Were they amazing?
They were melodramatically groovy.
Were they good?
They were very good, actually. Fantastic. They were very overwhelmed to be playing at Coco for a second sold-out show. You've never played at Coco. I've never played a sold-out show at Coco.
No, that's absolutely true. And back once again, like the renegade master, it's editor of guardian.co.uk/music, Tim Jones. Hello, Tim.
Hello, Alexis. How are you?
How are you doing?
I'm very good.
What have you been up to?
Well, I've just been, like genuine rock and roller, just been taken out for a posh lunch by a major label.
Have you really?
Yes.
Wow, fantastic.
Keeping it real.
Absolutely. Our first feature today actually includes a couple of interviews from Tim. What a treat. This month, Angular Records release Cold Waves and Minimal Electronics Volume 1. It's a collection of obscure post-punk tracks from the early 80s. I think Cold Wave could probably be best described as sitting somewhere between Kraftwerk and sort of British synthpop, if you like. We'll be listening to Tim's interview with Joe from Angular, the label that put it out, shortly. But first, here's a clip from Figures by Absolute Body Control. The thing that you will learn about this genre is that the bands in it have the best names ever. Absolute Body Control, and this is the track Figures, which is the opening track on the album.
The whole thing kind of took place between a lot of bands, but that none of them knew each other. There wasn't any kind of scene particularly. I mean, they all ended up sounding the same, but that was due to the fact that they kind of, the first sort of wave of affordable kind of drum machines and like compact synthesizers that you could actually have in your room instead of these huge kind of lumbering kind of things that 70s electronic bands would have, you know, krautrock bands. Faust and Can and Neue and that sort of thing, and suddenly it was possible for people to have this stuff just sort of sitting on the end of their bed and make these songs. There wasn't even a sort of fanzine kind of culture between them. They didn't know anything about each other. They all came from provincial towns. They weren't kind of in the city. They didn't really play gigs, and they didn't release it much. They just made their own kind of cassettes, maybe, or didn't really record in studios particularly. There was no way of kind of creating a buzz, so they didn't sort of pursue their music particularly. You know, they never got discovered by anyone, they never got sort of promoted. Actually, there was a good story that one of the bands told me, Bal Palais. They sent some records to some people when they made their 7-inch back in 82 or whenever. And Daniel Miller from Mute wrote them a very encouraging letter saying, you know, I heard your song, I think it's amazing, I'd really like to talk to you more about this or something. And they, being the kind of, you know, at the age that they were and sort of not knowing anyone from the music business, they thought it was some kind of ogre-ish, kind of besuited kind of man with a bowler hat who was going to come and exploit them and take all their money. And they didn't trust him enough to sort of respond back. And they said, you know, when they watched the story of Mute unfold, and all, you know, as they got older, it seemed like a real kind of something they'd all been thinking about ever since. Just like, oh, you know, what if?
Mm-hmm.
about it is a lot of the post-punk stuff you hear is not always that mainstream sounding, but some of this, even though it's not recorded to the highest kind of quality of sound that some of the later synth-pop bands, they are still incredible tunes, and you only need to hear them once, really, and you just think, wow, that's a total dance floor hit. I mean, surely when you came across it, and you must have been blown away, you must have thought, wow, what a treasure trove.
Yeah, it was really very exciting and quite hard to believe that, you know, it hadn't been... you know, come to the fore of sort of people's musical kind of knowledge before. The first song was this one called Ruth, Polaroid Roman Photo by Ruth, and I was so kind of overwhelmed by that track that I actually went to Paris to try and find the guy who was Ruth, who was this experimental musician called Thierry Muller, and he's done about 25 albums of things that sound completely different to that, and it's just, it is kind of just him in a studio experimenting. It's very improvised. I went to a record shop that specialises in very obscure kind of French music, and it turned out they knew him, so I got his phone number and then literally just went for lunch with him the next day. And I think he thought I was a bit odd because I didn't really have a plan of what I wanted to do. It was just that I loved his song so much I wanted to sort of find out more about it, and I couldn't believe that it had never come out properly, and he told me that it had only sold 50 copies when it was released in 1985, and it just seemed so odd because it was such a great album that it came from. I mean, not just the song, but the whole album's really good. And so that was the start, and then I thought, well, you know, I'll find another load of songs like this and put them all together. It is, as you said, a kind of thing that's kind of a bit like punk, but punk so sort of dominated. When I think of it now, it's just a load of sort of talking heads, you know, on documentaries and television. It's just, you know, it's the same old thing of like watching the Sex Pistols on Tony Wilson's TV show or something. And with this, there's just nothing. So you have to create your own kind of imagery and ideas of what it was like and what the whole, you know, thing was about. And that's kind of what I like about it. And especially with music nowadays, when everyone's got a Twitter and a sort of photo diary, and like, you know what bands are up to all the time because they're always wanting to tell you. This, there's just nothing. There's no sort of history. There's no nothing to delve into, and so you've just got a photo and like a couple of songs.
Okay.
I think that's quite a unique thing. There's not many other sort of genres or types of music where you can, you know, have that little to go on, and I think that's quite nice. Really.
That's Joe Daniel from Angular Records there, talking about their new compilation, Cold Waves and Minimal Electronics, Volume 1. I love this. I love it because it sounds like basically somebody made it up for a laugh. If you listen to the band names on this compilation, Ausgang Verboten, End of Data, Linear Movement, The Neon Judgment. It is literally like somebody sat down and thought, what are the most early 80s names I can possibly think of? And it's totally forgotten. I think that's the other thing, Tim, isn't it? It seems to be completely buried. I'd never heard of this music before this compilation came out.
Yeah, and you wonder how many other things like this are just lying around that people happen to make in their bedrooms in, you know, Yugoslavia or whatever.
yeah, absolutely. Imagine that. Cold wave from behind the Iron Curtain. Imagine how gloomy that would sound.
My lips have come to kiss you.
My lips have come to kiss you, as the guy just sang on the... there's an invitation no lady could resist. Do you like it, Rosie?
Is it
up your Strasser, as I believe Ausgang Verboten would say?
It reminds me of when we had John Savage, the wonderful John Savage.
Lovely John Savage.
Can't get him to talk much, but...
No. He doesn't like to talk about himself.
He came on to talk about the Soul Jazz New Wave Electro compilation, and he was making the point that punk and disco flourished at the same time, and you know one was much maligned to a degree by the popular press, and the other was considered incredibly revolutionary, and this is the period in time when they've started to come together.
That's interesting,
and
isn't it?
Makes both of them sound infinitely better.
Yes, I think that's really true. I mean, how would you say, Tim, this sort of music is different from British synth bands of the era? I mean, to my ears, it seems to be much more influenced by the sort of very, very first wave of British synthesizer people like mm-hmm. The Normal and Throbbing Gristle than it is by Depeche Mode, or although some of it's quite late. I mean, some of it comes from the mid-80s. What would you say the sort of difference is between Cold Wave and...
I'd say there's definitely a more gothic edge to it than the later synth pop.
My lips have come to kiss you.
Yeah, I think that a lot of the bands were absolutely obsessed with like Martin Hannett and obviously bands like Joy Division. So there's that kind of... And also, I think these bands... These are all the synthy ones, but there's a lot of them that are making more kind of gloomy kind of sounds as well. So
guitar rock.
Yeah, basically. So I don't know, it's just not as clean, is it? It's not quite as... Even though it's quite commercial, I don't think it's so deliberately commercial. I think they were trying to make kind of just weird music.
Serious music rather than
very serious
music,
And it ended up just sounding great for dancing to.
They also sound like people that have spent as much time standing in front of a mirror, sucking their cheeks in, trying to look like having an existential crisis as they did writing songs, which I think is always brilliant.
Yes,
I really like that. So, Tim, you managed to track down and speak to one of these Cold Wave artists.
Yes, I spoke to Lydia the Rose from Nine Circle, which Nine Circles. I mean, the music sounds like Ladytron.
Does it?
Very, very much like Ladytron, which 20 or 30 years before, so which... I thought it was fascinating.
Well done, Ladytron.
I mean, that's all we have to do.
Yeah, that's
really.
What. The first time I heard Ladytron, I was like, yeah, they're a total ripoff of Nine Circles featuring Lydia the Rose. Heard it all before. You're on.
So, yeah, I mean, I just wanted to speak to you. I wanted to know more about what it was like making Cold Wave back in 1982. So I asked her if there was actually a scene in the Netherlands at the time.
No, we were living in a building, and on every floor, people were making music. It was a complete feast.
So it's like a kind of a musical commune kind of thing.
Yeah, yes, it was like everybody was making new wave music and had just bought synthesizers and rhythm boxes. Strength, what is coming down? I feel and I just receive. Do you get the message from far away? The spirit I can feel close to the other world, but not far enough to reach.
And how did people respond to the music? Were they really surprised that there was this? Because I mean, it was quite a kind of a new sound, really.
It was very interesting to see how they reacted on it, but they didn't know really what to do with it yet.
And which bands kind of were your influences? Because I hear a bit of kind of the Martin Hannett production.
Yeah, my inspiration is the Joy Division, Depeche Mode, that kind of groups, because they were very active back then too.
I mean, how successful was the band at the time?
Oh, not very successful. We just had this time in the studio for an LP recording with two numbers. Mm-hmm. And we had one show live from the radio, and that was it.
So after the band, what did you do after the band kind of split up?
I got involved in a new relation. I adopted 7 children, and I was a mom for 27 years.
Okay, wow. And I mean, I've heard that you're now back making music again.
Yes, about 9 or 10 months ago, my youngest son put my name on Google for fun.
Okay.
And then he said, Mommy, come take a look. And then I was all over there. So I found my partner back from back then, from Nine Circles.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not allowed to get involved with me, so he's sending me all the music of Nine Circles. And I can do whatever I want with it. And recently I'm starting to make some new numbers in the style that I was making them back then.
Why isn't he allowed to get involved with you?
His wife doesn't like that.
Oh, right, okay. Do you feel kind of vindicated? Because at the time you said you weren't that successful, but now so many people are becoming interested in the music.
Yeah, I'm really surprised now what is happening, and I never believed that a thing like that was happening, because I thought our music was nothing for all these years.
Lydia the Rose from Nine Circles there. What an amazing story. I was in this band, and we did like one tape, and we were on the radio once ever, Then I got married and adopted 7 children and was a mother for 27 years. And now I'm trying to get the band back together, but the other bloke and his wife won't let him get involved. Absolutely fantastic.
And she's on Google.
And she's all over Google,
and
apparently.
She's on Music Weekly.
And she's on Music Weekly. Imagine how weird that must be for Lydia the Rose. There's some bloke from a British newspaper ringing up. You know, 27 years of motherhood, and then some guy comes on the phone and goes, oh, about this record you made in 1980. Absolutely.
I think
incredible.
That's going to happen to me about some of my live reviews in 30 years' time. Yeah. That's what I'm holding out for.
But you better get an interesting backstory sorted right now.
Yeah, yeah.
You better adopt some children.
Exactly.
Actually, there is another Cold Wave compilation come out in addition to this one, I noticed. It points to an almost bottomless supply.
Well, I think a lot of the bands around now as well, like Cold Cave, are very much influenced by it, by this kind of music as well. So there is a
yeah, all they've done is change one letter.
Yeah, exactly.
Of the movement. It's like
they're not quite as good as Cold Wives, but
Cold Wives, amazing. That's the problem with the Reforming Nine Circles, Cold Wife. Hey, Brumtish, thank you. Is it a joke there? A Cold Wave joke? I bet there weren't many jokes on the Cold Wave. They don't sound like people who are yucking it up, do
doesn't
they?
Doesn't blend itself to comedy.
No, here's another one. I'm really intrigued by it. You do sort of wonder if it's... There are certain genres of music that there seems to be a bottomless supply of unheard recordings. Northern Soul, they're still digging up Northern Soul records now, you know, 40 years after that scene started. There seems to be an unending supply of mid-60s garage rock records from the Midwest of America. You wonder how much Cold Wave stuff there is out there. If indeed there were Cold Wave bands behind the Iron Curtain.
Well, Simon Reynolds was writing this about last year. He wrote a blog saying, you know, what's going to be the next untapped area? And he predicted the mid-80s bands like Stump.
Yep.
Which I just couldn't see happening.
Anyway, that I think it's brilliant. Cold Waves and Minimal Electronics are fantastic. Compilation of a really, really intriguing bit of musical archaeology. It's out now on Angular. Singles Club now, the place where Rosie, Tim and I put a new release forward for discussion. Let us know what you think of our selections at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. And let's start with Rosie's choice. Wow, that was Jump in the Air by Erykah Badu. More records like that, please. Rosie.
So you're a fan?
I'm a huge fan. You brought that in. Tell us why you like it, and then I'll tell you why I like it.
I tell you what I do like. I like how we keep starting with my singles and podcasts.
It's because they're the most important. Oh. You're the most important person here, Rosie.
Well, yes. What's not to like about Erykah Badu? Everything about her. Well,
quite a lot.
If you're
back
a journalist,
in the day, I think.
Why?
I always thought Erykah Badu was... and there's no polite way of putting this, a bit of a pain in the arse. I quite liked her records when she first came out, but I remember I went to see her live, and when she was doing that song On and On, yeah. She was literally wagging her finger at the audience as she sang, and I thought, you know what, love, fuck off. Wagging your finger at
doesn't
me.
Doesn't really sound that bad.
But you know, I don't kind of there's that line, and so she goes, because you did not do your math. I don't wag your finger at people. That's a terrible thing to do.
Interestingly, I've just finished reading a book called, well, interesting will be, you know.
Uninterestingly.
Yeah, uninterestingly for some people, a book called Girl Power, which is all about the music of the 90s, which is actually, you know, there is a bit about the Spice Girls in there, but that's not heralded as any sort of high point.
Sure,
it's more about Salt and Pepper, Girl, Riot Girl, that kind of thing, and everything that was happening there. And Erykah Badu's album Baduism came out in 1997, and it got me thinking when I was listening to this song and listening to back to how much I liked her at that point in my mid-teens, and thinking how much amazing music was being put out by genuinely interesting, weird and different and not afraid to be different female artists, and how much it scares me for teenage girls of today to have to grow up with apparently not a single woman in the music industry prepared to be creatively express herself without also being naked.
That's Pixie Lott.
Oh yeah, sorry, sponsored by Nokia. Yeah, no, I love Pixie Lott. But the song... I guess what you say about the sanctimonious side of her, she's definitely got that. But this is spiritual without being naff. It's incredibly funky without that being a bad thing. Mm. She said about this track that she's got 9 different vocalists on it, but she won't release information about exactly who's on it, although she said that one of the people is Estelle.
Really?
Because okay. She's a real big fan of Estelle, and so people have been guessing as to who's...
I'm saying it's Lydia the Rose is on
Lydia
there.
Lydia the Rose is definitely next in appearance. And I think, you know, 9 vocalists on a track by a hip-hop or urban or soul artist can often just be a case of trying to look really cool, and in this case, so powerful, all those vocals, it feels like a sermon.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting, more in that her music changed pretty dramatically, I think, on her last album. I always thought that whole new soul thing was like black Britpop. I totally failed to see the point of it at all, because it's like, well, you've made a record that sounds a bit like a Donny Hathaway record. Mm. Well, why would I listen to that on the Donny Hathaway record? However, on her last album, and clearly on this album, Erykah Badu sort of seemed to venture off in some crazy psychedelic soul trip. Mm. Really modern, really strange, really weird, really interesting political.
She says she listens to things like King Crimson.
Does she?
Yeah.
Wow. Somebody asked it.
Yeah.
Tim, did you like it?
I thought about the psychedelic thing as well, because this week we've had the MGMT album streaming on our site, and, you know, people are discussing whether that's psychedelic or not. And a lot of guitar bands, it's such a nostalgia thing to do the whole psychedelic. And this is genuinely kind of weird, freaky
forward thinking, yeah.
It sounds like quite, like it's liquid. It sounds like a liquid song. It's like running through your earlobes.
Famous liquid pouring out of your earlobes after you've been to the musical swimming bath.
Exactly. That's not I haven't gone too weird with that metaphor.
No, not at all.
Liquid, I like this.
But I agree with you both. I just think it's a really brilliant song.
Yeah, it's amazing. I thought it was fantastic. That's Jump in the Air by Erykah Badu. 3 thumbs up. 6 thumbs up, in fact, for Jump in the Air by Erykah Badu, which can be found on the New America Part 2, Return of the Ankh. It's her album, which is released on March the 30th. Let's hear Tim's choice. She said, I love you more than words can say. She said, I love you, baby. Yes, she did. So now I'm up in the courts, pleading my case on the witness box. Telling the judge and the jury the same thing that I said to the cops. On the day that I got arrested, I'm innocent, I protested. She just feels rejected. Had a heart broken by someone she's obsessed with. Cause she likes the sound of my music. She makes her a fan of my music. So why love goes down, makes her lose it. Cause she can't separate the man from the music. Tim, that's your choice. That's She Said by Plan B. What'd you bring that in for?
But I really like the new Plan B album. I actually think it's brilliant. In most parts.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't my favourite track on the album, but I thought it was very interesting because this is basically as full-on Winehouse as he gets.
Yeah.
And so I think it's interesting because there's almost something quite contrived about this song. I know it's my choice. But
I think there is something quite contrived about the whole sort of reinvention of Plan B, and I think he would probably agree. I think
he's kind of going along with it and saying, I think he said in interviews, of course I'm trying to do what Winehouse has done because she's sold all these records.
Yeah.
At the same time, I think a lot of the songs on the album he really pulls off.
Yeah.
Especially the one that sounds like Charles and Eddie. This one...
You can never go wrong sounding like Charles and Eddie, can you? Would I like it? What an amazing record.
I mean, this one is fine. It's a bit... I mean, I don't know. I like the fact that in the rap, he mentions Valerie.
Mm.
And he rhymes it with Gallery. From he talks about the Zooton song Valerie, which is just such a clunky rhyme. But it's quite a good White House tribute.
And I watched Tony Hart's Gallery. And after that,
I just thought it was a good one to debate more than anything else, because I think it's the whole...
I was a fan of the first Plan B album. I mean, it has to be said, he couldn't... If he'd made any more of a dramatic sort of change in his, you know, in his musical style, he'd be up there in a kilt doing Scotland the Brave on the bagpipes, frankly. I like the fact that he's being really open. In the interviews I read, he went, well, yeah, I got all this critical acclaim, and I sold about 8 records, and I want to keep doing this, so this is what I'm going to do. And he really can sing.
He's a brilliant singer.
He's an amazing vocalist, which is not, you know, to me. He did a track in between these things, where he did like an acoustic track about the Iraq War that he'd written himself. He's saying, I see your face.
Sounds just, abysmal, doesn't it?
It sounds abysmal. I actually thought it was quite good.
Valerie feature in that one?
No, Valerie wasn't mentioned. That's before, it didn't really sound like Amy Winehouse. I think it's an interesting reinvention. It's clearly working. There is something a bit contrived about it. Maybe it doesn't matter. Pop music doesn't necessarily have to be uncontrived. Does it, Rosie?
I have to say, after all these crap young female artists who were desperately trying to mould into an Amy Winehouse copy in a bid to sell loads of records. Who knew that just around the corner Plan B was going to become the new Amy Winehouse? I mean, no one was waiting for him to do a repeat of his first album.
I really don't know.
Who was waiting for that again?
It was Mama Loves a Crackhead Part 2.
It was so obvious.
Mama doesn't like a crackhead
anymore. Mama's divorced a crackhead.
It dated very badly.
Yeah.
Yes. Do I like it? I find the way he sets himself up as the protagonist is a sort of fantasising about himself in a gangster Brit flick quite annoying. You know,
he has starred in gangster Brit flicks,
though. Is that Shank? Or is
it
a different one?
Shank. Well, great. Shank. I wouldn't go and see a film called Shank.
It's about, London when the gangs take over. No, what is it going to be like? Yeah.
Oh, that
and everyone gets shanked.
Absolutely atrocious.
I think he's in. Oh, no. Harry Brown. Is he in that? Or who knows?
I think, anyway, yes, he's in Harry Brown. Yeah. Yes, he is in Harry Brown.
It's just that it just feels like such a very, very tired concept. Mm. And it's been, it's more from his videos, but it's obviously how he wants to represent himself as this geezer.
Mm.
And it's just incredibly tired listening to someone say that. And I don't really know what this song's about, but I've got a feeling it's about something a little bit dodgy.
I'd probably add, in the rap. As a final word, this song isn't helped by coming straight after Erykah Badu.
No, we were talking about that sort of forward thinking ideas about music, and then obviously he put
Amy Winehouse as a man.
It's anyway, that's She Said by Plan B. Three for that, including from the person who brought it in. That's out on Monday, and finally, it's my choice.
Gay boy. I want you, I need you, I think I love you. Hey baby, what's up? I missed you, honey. You always want what you can't have.
That was my choice of single of the week. That was Gay Boy by Farrah. I mean, it's a Marmite record. I'll say that much for it. I can't make up my mind whether I think it's absolute genius or an absolute pile of shit. But I think that's good. I think that's a really good thing for a record to challenge you in that way. The first time I heard it, I just thought, this is fantastic. This is like a sort of modern day Shangri-La's kind of thing, but done in this sort of floaty, ambient way. The lyrics are both very funny and also quite moving and sad in their own way. And then other times I listen to it and I'm like, what's going on? Apparently the label that put it out, which is a very hip American label called Italians Do It Better, who've put out a load of really exciting new disco stuff in the past, they've had this track for 18 months and have been deliberating whether to release it or not. They don't really, and they finally bitten the bullet.
And Radio 1 are all over it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's storming up the charts. It's snapping at Plan B's heels. What does everybody else make of it?
I actually do like it. I can't, in the sense that it's the kind of thing that various female MCs have been trying to do, and I guess I'm looking at Uffy here.
Mm.
I've been trying to do that, I'm going to mock the American It Girl high school thing, but whilst also completely embracing that lifestyle and not being quite smart enough to do it in a particularly witty or witty way, and she does that perfectly here. Mm. And I think you're right about it being a bit sad as well, a little bit moving, because by the end of it she's actually saying, come on, your boyfriend's asleep, please get off with me.
She's actually going, I'm gonna get you fucked up, and it's like, have another drink. And it's absolutely remarkable,
but in the little context of that snippet that we heard there, it did sound very funny.
I mean, it is both funny and sad.
All you could want in a track, really.
Absolutely. Tim?
Yeah, well, I mean, I had not heard this until you sent me the link. And how often do you go on a blog these days and press play and think, I've not heard anything like that in my life? everything's so conformist these days of what's hip and what's not. And straight away I thought, who is this girl? What does she look like? And what kind of, what's the story there? I just think it's really, I just that's great to have that level of intrigue straight away.
Absolutely. Apparently she was meant to play at South by Southwest and blew the gig out because it was muddy and it would spoil her heels, apparently.
Oh, so talking about Glastonbury.
How muddy does it get in Texas? I don't know. It's an intriguing thing. She's got an album coming out. I don't know if you could stick 70 minutes on it.
Well, actually, I went to her MySpace page and it is a bit more like Italians do it better as general output, which right. I really like, that kind of Italo disco. So, you know, it's not all about this gay boy.
No, 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 absolutely. And the blog that I found the track on was written by a gay bloke who apparently thinks it's about him.
Oh.
Noza.
So that's also a bit sad.
That's also a bit sad as well. Different kind of sad. Gay Boy by Farah is out now on 12-inch on Italians Do It Better. Right, let's have some feedback from last week's podcast. The Gaff was prolific on the blog. One of his posts reads, "Interesting fact, Beach House and Yeser are both managed by the same guy." Do you think this is one of those posts where it's like, it's all a conspiracy? Do you think it's
you've been paid.
You've been paid. Well done for playing along, The Guardian. And Yeser aren't wanky Brooklynites, I beg to differ. They're from Baltimore too, as are Beach House and their manager. But I think Yeser are based in Brooklyn. I think it's fair to say, I wasn't actually saying they're wanky Brooklynites because they're from Brooklyn. I was saying they're part of a slightly wanky...
Also, you were
Brooklyn.
Saying that's what you used to think.
What do you think? And I think they're amazing. Their manager apparently worked on series 4 and 5 of The Wire. I think he was involved in production. Interesting.
It's a conspiracy.
It's a conspiracy.
You always hear Yeser in the background when they're doing the drug deals.
Yeser everywhere. Is there no escape from Yeser and Beach House on The Wire? On your label showing, Zookatron comments, "Nice piece on Hot Flush." Thanks, Zookatron. "I too have no interest in the kind of dubstep from the last couple of years. Overproduced, aggressive sawtooth bass and halftime beats. It just makes me think of students called Tarquin taking K and saying sick a lot. I really like the current wave of guys, though. Joy Orbison, Floating Points, Untold, etc." Do you know something? I had no idea that Floating Points... I've got a couple of records, but I didn't know that was dubstep. There you go. Doesn't sound anything like dubstep to me, but that's probably what's good about it. And Sean D. Wilson writes, "Rosie, this is your fault. If you're going to come on this blog and start carrying on like A.A. Gill..." Hey, people from New Zealand. Sean D. Wilson writes, "As to whether New Zealand is boring, I've been bored for some of the 21 years, making up my entire life I've lived here. But overall, plenty to engage with, depending on where you live. We do tend to roam the planet in search of interesting things, but usually remember to come back. A better question is why New Zealand produces a disproportionate amount of the world's best music." Perhaps... Perhaps, actually, in fairness, I know what he's talking about, Flying Nun Records, that kind of caper, like them a lot. Perhaps do a Kiwi special. No need to make it Antipodean. Come on, hang on a minute. Unless the Avalanches ever get round to releasing another album. I'm not 100% certain that Australia can't hold its own in terms of producing brilliant... I think there's a little bit more to Australian music than just the Avalanches, Mr. Sean D. Wilson.
Men at Work,
there is absolutely. Midnight Oil.
Pales in comparison to the Datsuns, though.
God, remember them. Anywho, yeah, but no, there's loads of good bands from New Zealand. Thanks as ever for your comments. Don't forget to befriend us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter too. We've got a live track now, and also a chat with Husky Rescue. The Finnish ambient pop band's third album, Ship of Life, has received glowing reviews, not least from our very own Michael Hann. We can hear Rosie chatting to them shortly, but first, here is Wolf Track Motel, a track from the new album.
We're here in the studio with Husky Rescue. It's absolutely, definitely the biggest band we've had in such a small studio, 7-piece. They were formed by Marco Nyberg in 2002. Marco, before we hear a live track from you guys, I wanted to talk to you about the inspiration for your new album, Ship of Light, because I'd read that you were inspired by being in Lapland. Is that true?
It's true.
It's true. What did you find inspirational about Lapland?
It's sort of airiness and the space. What's around that I mean, because there is not that much around, only that beautiful nature.
You've said before about, and I'm sure this has been quoted to you a lot, but you've said before, Husky Rescue reflects our background in Helsinki, where the winter nights are so cold and long while the summer is hot and short but oh so sweet. Have you ever considered moving somewhere tropical to see whether the music would sound completely different?
Not really.
No.
Because I'm scared about that kind of really active nature.
With your music, what is it you want to do? Do you want to reflect the environment around you, or you know, go against it in a way?
I kind of feel that it's not going against the nature or the environment, because I kind of find that in the music there is this kind of airiness, and it's there needs to be this kind of space hearable also in the music. And how I feel the music, it's kind of some sort of window to that kind of world where we are living.
Okay.
So you can watch
inside. Okay, well, you're going to play us a track from the new album?
Yes.
What's the track called?
Sound of Love.
Sound of Love. Okay, take it away.
From you sexy Finns. That was Sound of Love by Finland, obviously. That was a stupid thing to say, wasn't it? That was Sound of Love from Husky Rescue. Interesting band, interesting bunch.
It's different from their sound on record.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot less synthesizer-y. But it sort of worked, I think, as an acoustic track. Do we
wouldn't have known that there were seven people involved in it.
No, there were a lot of people there breathing. And so, yeah. Were those people clapping?
I can't remember. It was
the first time I ever saw Jonathan Richman live, which was about 1985. He had a bloke on stage with him, and all the bloke did was clap along to the song. It was absolutely amazing. It's like the easiest gig in pop. Tim, Husky Rescue?
Sounded all right to me.
Absolutely.
Can't say it blew me away.
There's
on
no
first
plan
listen.
B.
No, it's no plan B, is it? No. No, I think it's an interesting thing. I think it worked both as acoustic and as a
record.
I can't believe I'm still getting over the fact that I made that terrible "Where are you from, you sexy Finns" pun, and obviously they're from Finland. It's like that amazing Thin Lizzy lyric that goes, "Tonight there's going to be a jailbreak somewhere
in this town,
probably at the jail." anyway, "Ship of Life" by Husky Rescue is out now. We've come to the end of today's show. Cheers for coming in, Tim.
Not a problem.
Sure, I'll see you again.
Yes. It's my job.
Yeah, because you're paid. We're both paid to hang out with each other.
I always enjoy the pod. So absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Hey, no problem, man. No problem. Nice one, Rosie. Cheers. See you next week.
See you Lovely. Next week.
My thanks to our producer, Pete. I'm Alexis Petridis, and my lips have come to kiss you.